Made in China. Those three words appear on everything from computers to toys to massive industrial parts. But behind those three words is a history of forced labor, human rights abuses, and stolen trade secrets. As democratic countries rally behind the call for freedom and holding the Chinese Communist regime accountable for its human rights atrocities, are consumers going to see less made in China products going forward? In this special report, we look at what China's 2022 economic outlook means for companies trying to do business in China.
I'm just kidding.
For investors weighing the risks and how the average Joe at home could be impacted without even realizing it. Welcome to China in Focus. I'm Tiffany Meyer. With a potential war brewing on the horizon, continued lockdowns, and Beijing's upcoming Winter Olympics steeped in controversy, 2022 is off to a rocky start, and it's only promising more.
The world economy is going to continue to suffer.
But what do all these events mean for China's 2022 economic outlook? And have the impacts already rippled into global markets and influenced consumers?
Anyone who's invested in Chinese tech stocks in the past year has been very disappointed.
Under China's harsh pandemic measures, massive lockdowns left factories empty, supply chains stalled. At the same time, thousands of miles away in America, the pandemic led to an increase in consumer spending, most of those goods coming from China.
The American consumer has been on a binge buying Chinese products.
But China couldn't meet the demand.
The global supply chain has shown weaknesses over the past 2 years.
Consumers around the world met with empty shelves, unable to find what they needed, from daily necessities to face masks and ventilators. That all traces back to global manufacturing, and China is known as the world's factory. Since joining the World Trade Organization in 2001, China has exploded in influence on the global stage, snagging the title of the world's factory. 28% of global manufacturing comes out of China. That's nearly as much as America, Japan, and Germany combined. Those numbers come from accounting firm Global Upside in 2019. China has been able to do that thanks to low labor costs, low taxes, and lack of regulatory compliance, to name just a few. But the pandemic threw a wrench into that system. To combat virus spread, China took an approach known as zero COVID policy, which meant strict lockdowns and mass testing anytime so much as a single case popped up. And with workers staying at home, factories were left empty.
We're still seeing significant backups in the ports of Los Angeles. We're seeing significant delays out of China. That's going to be a major issue going forward.
Despite the massive lockdown sweeping across the country, China's status as the world's factory seems intact.
It is the world's factory, and it's very big.
But as we head into this new year, something does seem to be changing.
There's an increasing movement in the U.S. to bring production back to the U.S. or to move it out of China.
Clyde Prestowitz, president of the Economic Strategy Institute, notes some might call it a division of supply lines.
For instance, companies want to be able to say, if I'm selling to the American market, if I'm a computer company that might be selling computers to the U.S. government, I need to have those computers made in India. I need to have those computers made in Mexico, which is a trusted partner of the U.S. government.
But David Goldman, deputy editor at Asia Times, doesn't see that happening.
And as long as that occurs, if people want electronics, and Tim Cook of Apple Computer says he can't build a smartphone in the United States, Americans will keep buying Chinese products, despite the fact that the sentiment against China is certainly as negative, more negative than it ever has been. But if you want a computer and it's made in China and you can't get a computer made in the United States, you'll buy a Chinese computer.
But the pandemic isn't the only major issue. Another one rearing its head is politics.
On top of that, I think there's an increasing disconnect between the values and and the expected behavior, companies and leaders who are engaged with China and also with the outside world. So,
as part of its Top Risks 2022 report, political risk consultancy Eurasia Group says the Beijing Winter Olympics is highlighting a danger facing companies caught in the middle. The report notes a two-way risk. On one hand, if a company speaks out against forced labor and human rights issues in China, it faces fury from Chinese regulators and consumers. But if it doesn't, it faces backlash from regulators and consumers in the West. Companies are now finding it harder and harder to do business there, and trying to please not only China, but also the democracies in the West.
Most companies are probably having their PR reps hang by the phone and hope that it doesn't ring.
The U.S. recently passed a law banning importers from sourcing goods from Xinjiang. That's over China's genocide against the Uyghur ethnic minority in the region. Companies soon found themselves stuck in the middle between bringing in profit and upholding their values. Walmart stopped importing goods from Xinjiang, only to immediately feel Beijing's wrath. On the flip side, Elon Musk just opened a Tesla showroom in Xinjiang. But for some, they might not even know their values are being betrayed.
More and more free world executives and major corporations are going to be faced increasingly with this contradiction between wanting to do business in China, but in order to do business in China, they have to betray their own values.
Those people are school teachers, firefighters, or even government employees. And as a result of that system,
most people probably don't even realize they're invested in Chinese firms. And most of that money is coming through what we call passive flow. And basically a passive flow is your pension fund, your mutual fund that you buy automatically, for instance, formulaically sends $5 to China. And then of that $5, every penny is equally distributed between all the companies allowed to invest. So there's no differentiation.
Despite those risks, China's massive population of 1.4 billion makes it highly desirable for companies to get in on the action and profit through the Chinese market. But it's tricky doing business in China. Christopher Balding, senior fellow at the Henry Jackson Society, has over a decade of experience living and working in China and Vietnam. He notes the delicate dance of navigating China's unwritten rules.
Give you just one example. There was an entire cottage industry. When you filed your incorporation papers to start a business in China, you had to declare, you had to show proof that your company had a bank account with X amount of money in it. But you couldn't open a bank account under a corporate name without the registration papers. So you were in a catch-22.
It seems it's not just U.S. companies caught in the middle. Chinese companies are also dealing with a double-edged sword. On one end, there's the potential for triggering the communist regime's wrath. And on the other,
the Securities and Exchange Commission in the United States is making demands on Chinese companies to be as transparent as American companies in their accounting and reporting, which of course they aren't. Chinese reporting standards are far more opaque and unreliable.
Examples is that Didi, the ride-sharing company in China, they were in business for, I think, about 4 to 5 years, processing millions of rides a day before they got their official business license in Beijing.
Beijing is known to leverage business licenses over its own companies, wielding the power to give or take them away at will.
And so this gives the government enormous authority to control businesses, because a business can basically be shown that they've broken the law almost at any time.
Didi made headlines for several reasons. First, for raising a record $4.4 billion through its IPO when it listed on the New York Stock Exchange in June of last year. But as a ride-hail company, Didi has the potential to collect and store massive amounts of data, including on the Chinese Communist Party's leaders. That's as Didi's rideshare cars transport officials to and from government buildings, while its GPS systems record where, when, and how often. Out of fear that such details could find their way to the U.S., the Chinese regime clamped down on the company.
So effectively, it was forced out of the U.S. market.
So what are Chinese companies to do? Many are moving out. The companies
delists in America and relists in Hong Kong.
Now, for investing, risk is the name of the game. But is China getting too risky to invest in?
Definitely say it's too risky. And I say that for multiple reasons.
First up, despite China's reputation as a high-growth economy, stocks in China only average around 2% annually over any long-term period of time. What that means is putting the same sum in the bank will often yield better returns. Secondly, Chinese companies don't face the same kind of regulatory oversight that companies in the U.S. must meet to produce shareholder returns. Thirdly, and what some might argue most importantly, national security. Chinese companies listed in the U.S. are closely tied to the Chinese regime. They're either state-owned or linked to the country's military. That raises national security concerns here in the U.S. On top of those concerns, other big events looming on the horizon include the so-called upcoming election, where Chinese leader Xi Jinping is set to gain an unprecedented third term, leading him to follow in the footsteps of the Chinese Communist Party's founder Mao Zedong. As for what happens during a so-called election year,
they typically really stimulate the economy in these election years. And I don't think this is going to be an outlier. I think they are going to stimulate the economy. They are also concerned about debt.
That's on top of the money being funneled into this year's Winter Olympics in Beijing. All those costs are expected to increase Chinese debt. And speaking of debt, another area in the spotlight is China's real estate sector, with real estate giant Evergrande making headlines for racking up $300 billion in obligations. Unable to pay it all, the company defaulted late last year.
You do have this slow motion train wreck, for lack of a better term, of the real estate market in China, whether it's the developers, whether it's the number of homes that consumers are buying. That is a major issue in China. And right now, there really is no resolution, especially with Evergrande and related type of developers. They're just continuing to kick the can down the road.
But on top of stocks, financial turmoil, and the companies trying to navigate these fields, there's another bigger risk looming on the horizon, the threat of war. Beijing has been upping aggressions in the Indo-Pacific region, specifically targeting Taiwan. China views Taiwan as part of its own territory. That's despite the island having its own democratically elected leader and constitution. Beijing has threatened to bring the island under its control by force if necessary, and has been regularly flexing its military might by sending warplanes soaring through the island's air defense identification zone. So why does Beijing see Taiwan as such a thorn in its side?
Taiwan is an alternative that China does not have to be ruled by the thuggish Chinese Communist Party. Taiwan offers an alternative government, right? Taiwan demonstrates that China works as a democracy. And so, of course, the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, hate it, and they want to get rid of it because they recognize it's a rival. It's an alternative and a very viable one.
Bradley Thayer, founding member of the Committee on the Present Danger China, highlights the ideological front as one aspect. And on the defense front, Taiwan is part of a unique geographical barrier, what's known as the First Island Chain. It stands between China and the deep waters beyond. If Taiwan falls, the Pacific Ocean opens up, and Chinese nuclear-armed submarines can reach America, undetected and nearly impossible to stop. If war were to break out, senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy, Grant Newsham, says,
this is something that will be felt worldwide. If you want to see a stock market crash 25,000 points in an afternoon, well, that's wait for that war to start.
And it goes even beyond that.
Global trade and the economy will be just ravaged by this.
So going into 2022, what should consumers and companies keep in mind?
We continue to be surprised as to what is coming. 2 years ago, we probably wouldn't have expected where we were now. Even a year ago, I think we probably would be somewhat a little surprised as to the problems that we're now having.
The Communist Party under Xi Jinping has really been tightening its control, not just of the politics, but of the economy and the production. And it has been increasing the role of state-owned corporations and reducing, really, the role of private entrepreneurs and private industry.
So going forward, are consumers likely to see fewer made in China products?
There isn't really an answer yet. But I do think both at the public policy and at the corporate level, those questions are very much being looked at much closer than they were 2 years ago.
Questions under consideration include sourcing goods closer, like to Mexico, to avoid supply chain issues. As Balding notes, there's a major rethink happening in both corporate America and at the public policy level. So keep an eye out, because that shakeup could change the way the country deals with China in the coming year. Coming up, ahead of a busy traveling season, Chinese authorities suspend more U.S. flights and seal of its borders to travelers. More on that after the break. Now we turn to today's headlines. It's a bad time for travelers headed to or from China. Beijing just suspended 6 more incoming flights from the U.S. on Wednesday, all of them scheduled for the coming weeks. That says it scrambles to contain local virus outbreaks. Officials also halted another 6 flights from France and Canada. The cut marks the 70th such cancellation this year, and it's not over. Next on the chopping block, 2 United Airlines flights from San Francisco to Shanghai and 4 China Southern Airlines flights from Los Angeles to Guangzhou. Those suspensions are also primed to impact return flights in February. Before the latest cancellations, U.S. and Chinese carriers were operating about 20 flights a week. Still, that's well below their more than 100 per week average from before the pandemic. And U.S. carriers are concerned. They say they are currently talking with authorities from both countries, looking to minimize impact for travelers. The U.S. Transportation Department did not immediately comment on the matter. China in particular seems to be sealing off its borders to travelers. According to Chinese aviation regulators, the country is cutting total international flights down to just 200 a week, or 2% of pre-pandemic levels. And in Hong Kong, a major transport hub, officials announced a 2-week ban last week, targeting incoming flights from 8 countries, including Britain and the United States. Travelers, including overseas Chinese people trying to get home, have had to scramble for expensive tickets, with only a handful available. One Chinese netizen described his frustration on social media, writing, "Now going back to China is like mission impossible." For Dutch athletes traveling to Beijing next month for the Winter Olympics, they may have to leave their phones and laptops at home. That's according to a Dutch newspaper report from Tuesday. Citing insiders, the paper says Dutch athletes were warned to keep personal devices out of China to avoid Chinese espionage. The urgent advice was given to athletes as part of a set of measures proposed by the Dutch Olympic Committee. Its spokesperson explained that a risk assessment on the upcoming Beijing trip included cybersecurity concerns. But given China's highly censored internet and surveillance tactics, unique action is needed. Dutch team members will be equipped with unused devices while inside China to protect their personal data from Chinese surveillance. At least 30 Dutch athletes are set to compete in next month's Beijing Olympics, mainly in the speed and short track skating events. Sweden won't send any officials to the Beijing Winter Olympics, but it's not from the international calls to boycott. On Tuesday, the country's sports minister told a local news outlet that the decision was made due to strict pandemic restrictions in China. He added that this is not a diplomatic boycott. The games are scheduled to take place next month, but few world leaders are expected to attend. That's because many foreign nations have diplomatically boycotted the event. That is, sending athletes to compete, but no official representatives to protest against human rights issues in China. Troubles are brewing for yet another Chinese real estate company. Developer R&F Properties is unable to pay off a $725 million bond payment due Thursday. But the company has so far avoided default because bondholders have agreed to give the Chinese firm an extension on the payment. This happened after the company paid over $100 million for a tender offer and fees to bondholders. But over $600 million are still outstanding. The extension lasts 6 months from Thursday, But this isn't the only payment the developer owes. The debt-laden RNF has close to $2 billion in bonds due by October this year. According to the developer, in 2021, it had contracted sales amounting to nearly $20 billion. RNF is one of the largest real estate companies in southern China's Guangzhou City. Next, we'd like to address some viewer feedback we received regarding the term Greater China. We quote the term as part of yesterday's episode from a statement published by a car manufacturer. It was used to describe the company's performance in mainland China, Hong Kong, Taiwan, and Macau. In the business world, these four locations are referred to as Greater China. Here at China in Focus, we recognized a number of key differences that separate them, especially mainland China and Taiwan. The Chinese Communist Party has never ruled Taiwan, despite its threats to invade. Mainland China operates under a one-party system and totalitarian regime, while Taiwan enjoys its own democratically elected president and constitution. What's more, the island's leaders widely respect human rights and freedoms. And that's all for today's China in Focus. Thanks for watching, and see you tomorrow.